Hi, I'm Ting Ta, VReg at BHRUT, and this is the next episode in our teaching series, Teaching for Our Time. This one is called A Plan, Not a Pathway, and it is going to be focused on the Individualised End-of-Life Care Plan with Ruth Wild, our End-of-Life Care Facilitator. It's important for us to say, though, that recognising dying can be really difficult. Patients can fluctuate, it can be unclear if they're definitely nearing the end, and so we're going to dedicate a whole separate episode to that, so please listen to that in conjunction with this one. But for today, I'm going to bring Ruth in and I'm going to ask, what is the Individualised End-of-Life Care Plan and when should we be using it?
The Individualised End-of-Life Care Plan is just a gold standard use of a plan that we use at the end of life. It is in conjunction with the MDT, so anybody can start the plan, but it is the responsibility of the consultant to agree that that is the time of life that the patient is at.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've been very clear about describing it as a plan and not a pathway, even though we still hear that used on the wards. Why is that really important?
So a number of years ago, there was such a thing as the Liverpool Care Pathway, and the perception from the public is that if they're put on the pathway, then everything stops. They don't eat, they don't drink, they just have lots of medications that basically kills them off. And that is not the thing that we want relatives to think of at this time of their lives. So therefore, that's why we call it a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think pathway sort of conjures that image of a one-way road, and you know, once you're on that trajectory, there's no coming back from that. And that kind of ties into this question again that we hear in the wards of, like, are you making this person end of life then?
We don't make people end of life. That is the part of life that they've reached at this point in time. So we are just using the care plan to make sure that we're given a high standard of care at that time of life.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the aspects of the plan that help us to provide individualised, personalised care, can you tell me a little bit about what's called the five Ps, or the five priorities?
Okay, so after the Liverpool Care Pathway was abandoned, there was 21 different organisations that got together, and they made up the Leadership Alliance, and they came up with the five priorities of care of the dying person, and that is to recognise that the person's dying, to communicate to the patient themselves and to the relatives that that is what's happening at this point, to involve them in the care that they want, to support them and their family at this time, and to plan and to do what the patient wants. So if the patient wanted to go home to end their life, then we could facilitate to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that communication bit is really important, and also ties back into one of our previous episodes actually about how to talk to the individual about the fact that they're dying and being honest with them about that. And so the bit about planning, making a plan rather than the doing, can you tell me about a few of the aspects that might involve, like for instance, if they have problems such as dry mouth or thirst, if they have any symptoms like pain?
Okay, so if you're starting somebody on the care plan, then we would envisage that you would also prescribe the anticipating medications that would alleviate the common symptoms that people have at this time in their life. Regarding the dry mouth, lots of people have an idea that they must have fluids at this stage, but often fluids can be more of a burden than a help at this stage, so therefore IV fluids are not necessarily needed. Mouth care is the most important thing that we should be giving for our patients, especially as when it does come to the last days, hours of life, they often mouth breathe, and then that makes it very dry, so mouth care is very important at this stage.
Mm. And sort of this ties into personalising the care a little bit as well. I think a lot of people are frightened of using anything other than water for mouth care. What would you sort of say to reassure people?
So the point of the care plan is to make it individualised. So if the patient used to drink a lot of tea, so then we can make a little cup of tea for them with their two sugars or whatever it is, and we can use that as mouth care. if the patient used to have like a whiskey before they went to bed or a Baileys, then we can also use that, ask the relatives to bring in a small bottle. We're not allowed to buy it ourselves, so get the relatives to bring a small bottle and we can use that as mouth care. So there is a bit of slight normality for the patient.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I've also had people saying, oh, but they're diabetic, are we sure about the sugar? And it's like, yes, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, whatever makes them happy. And in terms of finding where the care plan is and anything else that would be useful in supporting somebody's comfort, making sure everybody involved knows what's happening with the patient, what resources are there out on the wards?
So we have a symbol that shows that somebody is dying, and that's what we use, the Gerbera, which is on all our leaflets, on the care plan, and you'll find all the information in the blue boxes on the ward. So the Gerbera that we put up on the door will actually tell everybody who works in the trust that that is a dying patient to be a bit more respectful around that area. And if there was a phlebotomist and they was put in for a blood test, then the phlebotomist would know to question, and the porters, if they were supposed to be going for an investigation, would also question before taking this patient.
Yeah, and I think that really highlights the value of everybody knowing that somebody has this care plan in place. It makes sure that the whole team is sort of focusing on comfort, not doing unnecessary things, and that we are checking that they're having their needs met regularly. And I think framing the use of the care plan to family in that way is often quite reassuring. So as we said earlier, we don't feel like somebody's just being kind of stuck in a side room and ignored. And then often we've seen people pick up a little bit after a few days on the after thinking that they're end of life, they suddenly wake up and have a bit of breakfast. So what do we do in that situation?
So often people do pick up at the end of their life. We have something that's called a good day. That family seem to think that they are improving, and then often straight afterwards they would plummet and die in actual fact in the next 48 hours. So it is important that we recognise that people could pick up, and we can take people off the plan as well as putting them on the plan. And often we have done that with patients who have picked up for a couple of days and then we've taken them back off the plan. But it's also, staying on the plan isn't a bad thing either, because it just shows you that you're giving good quality care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've all had people where across, you know, the past year with a particular patient, they've had the care plan used a few times, but then they've picked up and gone home, but then perhaps come back into hospital again. But as you said, it just makes sure that each time the potential that they might die is being recognised, and if that is the time, then we're not missing the boat in terms of providing good end-of-life care. And then just a quick question about the role of the end-of-life care team versus the specialist palliative care team. So I think sometimes people don't know where the different areas of expertise lie.
So the specialist palliative care team focus more on symptoms and complex management of patients, whereas us as an end-of-life care team, we're there for a support and education to make sure that we have high-quality care when our patients are dying, and recognising people that are in their last year of life so that we can give them choice. And that's what we're trying to educate.
And I know that you guys are often roaming around on wards and attending board rounds, so we'd encourage anybody who wants a second opinion, or they're not sure if somebody may be approaching end of life or not, then to definitely get our support and advice.
Yeah, and often we go round and we pick up the staff nurse that's working in a bay, and we'll go, oh, what do you think about this patient? Do you think that they might be dying or deteriorating? And then we can talk through with them what they think, and then also with the doctors. And often they think it's quite beneficial that we have those conversations with them, because often they're just treating patients and they don't actually see the whole picture that they are actually deteriorating.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in having a sort of fresh pair of eyes, isn't there? Okay, so that was a bit of a whistle-stop tour through the end-of-life care plan, but hopefully that's a good place for you guys to get started, and as always, do contact the teams for more support if you need it.